The journey of entrepreneurship is all about following your heart. And today's guest is all about heart. Welcome to Zach's Heart to Biz podcast. I'm Ankita.
And I'm Zareen. And the lady we have today is, oh my God, so talented. And I'm so proud to call her my friend, Dhanya Pailo. There's a long list of creds that she has. Be ready. Filmmaker, sailor, experienced designer, catalyst, urbanist. Yeh sab kya hai? I don't know. Visual jockey, artist, wind catcher. Thinking of all kinds of things. Okay. Production designer.
Yeah, but
really, what inspired you? Like, from our childhood, I remember you were the girl who was climbing up the banyan tree while we were standing around and watching you glow up and praying.
I was inspiring you to climb the tree with me.
You were inspiring us what not to do. No, but that's not true. No, you always chased your heart. And what is it that in your childhood got you to do things as per what you wanted to do?
I think I've always been different. I think my parents knew it. I think my grandmom knew it. I think everyone around me knew I was a bit different. I just didn't know it. I was just doing my thing. I was always given the space to run around out in nature, either in Kerala or in Bombay or wherever we were at. The environment always had a sense of play. Now, I don't know if I asked for it or whether it happened, or whether that's how it was. I was just lucky to have a bit of that Enid Blyton childhood. Because my dad was also in the Navy, we were moving from city to city or town. And you were also meeting all kinds of people. You were put in different environments, different schools. So you were already used to meeting different people. So at some point, you just become very good at adapting to a new environment. I think those two things really...
And sports also was an integral part of growing up, right?
Yeah, sports, outdoors, adventure. I think bits of it came from my parents, but also the access to a lot of sporting facilities also then was like, hey, I should go try that. Hey, I should go try that. You know, I may not be good at it, but I should just go try it. In the services, for example, we have a lot of facilities, but I would also notice that a lot of facilities would be not used
at all.
You know, so I would be like, shit, am I the only one using it? You know, am I the only one going to the US club and studying for my economics paper? But then I was like, oh, there's three other girls from three other colleges and three of us would, you know, be studying there. So it's again, making the best of what you have and also knowing what you have and then pushing and putting it to use.
But also tell us about embracing no, right? You faced a quick rejection. I was watching your TED talk and I was so inspired by that no that you spoke about when your dad didn't allow you to go to a Shamik Davar class and sent you to a rifle learning class. How did that change and how do you embrace no? And as entrepreneurs, you face rejection and no so often. And you could make sense about that story at that point now, but how do you connect the dots when you are getting those no's across different fields that you work at?
Right. So as a child, you never have rationale of why your parents are guiding you in particular ways. And a lot of the times they also don't know, right? But the point is you have to persist. So whether you're persisting with a client or persisting with, you know, what you want to do, what you want to achieve, or just experiment, you know, so unless you do, you will not find out. And at that point, that particular example is all my friends were going for Shamik Davar's dance classes in the summer, and I was like probably not convinced myself, but I was doing it because other people are going. And there's a possibility my dad had a sense of that, or he just didn't see what I would achieve with that, you know. So literally the next day while I was reading the newspaper, I saw that there were rifle classes. And I was like, let's see if he says no to that. You know, like, I'll just throw things at him.
Let's raise the bar.
Yeah,
let's just
throw things at them and see what all are they going to say yes to and no. So when he said yes, I was like, oh, now I have to go for rifle classes. And that summer I went for rifle classes. And it was great because it taught me breathing, you know, how to breathe, how to take a shot, how to, you know, and eventually how I held a rifle for, you know, target practice. It kind of later on helped me as a filmmaker because my shots would be very steady because the way I held the camera was in the same principle of breathing.
So interesting, because you don't realize, and I keep saying this, that everything that you do in your lifetime, especially in your childhood, kind of comes to kind of hit you later on in life. And you're like, oh, I didn't realize that what I was doing then is going to lead up to what I'm doing right now. Like, I remember there were so many days when I was studying for my 12th standard, when my parents thought I was studying in the night, I was actually in front of the mirror and like dancing and with makeup and...
Well,
Who knew I would want to be a social media person? I'm living my dream being an entrepreneur. But that's what it is. Like, you don't realize how things just add up and you do some crazy things in your childhood.
Oh, yeah.
Which later come on to really be useful as a skill, which you didn't even know that you were developing at that time, right? And another skill that I know of yours is art. And a crazy thing that you did was founding the Wall Project. And the reason I find it so interesting, especially in the perspective of entrepreneurship, is that a lot of us as entrepreneurs believe that the best way to be able to create something which is memorable is if you have a community around it. If you have people who have a shared mission together and follow somebody's vision, so to speak. And with the Wall Project, you almost did that. You started something which was never heard of before, at least in our country. So tell us about how did that idea even come into existence? And then how did it become a movement? Like, and you were so young. Tell us everything about it.
Wow, that's a big question. The Wall Project started with, like, literally in my neighborhood in Bandra, there was a white painted wall. It was just stunningly white, and the rest of that area is like quaint Bandra with, you know, like an old fishing village with, you know, just local shops, and it had a color to it, right? And that white wall just looked too plain and too brash.
It stood out like a sore thumb.
It stood out, and I was like, something has to be done to it. And I literally, it was my building's wall, so I asked the landlord, you know, can I paint it? Would you mind? And he looked at me like very suspiciously. But I was like, hey, if you don't like it, I'll paint it back into whatever color you want. So win-win situation. Got the first permission to paint and just started painting. And people would walk by and they'd be like...
You were painting alone?
I think the first one I started painting alone, but then friends joined in. And we were also living in a part of Bandra where there was a lot of creative people floating around. And... then somebody came with beer, somebody said, I'll put on music.
And it became a party.
And it just became a party. Yeah. And then people were drawing, like, there was mice, there are rats in Bandra. So someone started doing rats. And then, you know, there were more rats. And then it was like, hey, there's a cat. So the ball.
You built a story.
So the stories, as people came, they would make a comment. And neighbors would be like, oh, you painting that wall looks nice. You paint my wall. And then after a point, like, I would be getting grief from neighbors saying, you haven't painted my wall yet. And I'll be like, oh, damn.
You never felt possessive. This is my idea. I don't want others to be taking part.
No, I was getting so much grief that I was like, I need to call more people. I can't do this on my own because there's so many walls. And it's nice that other people, there are so many creative people floating around. It'll be nice to give everyone a wall to paint. And that's literally what we did. And then we got like more permissions. And a lot of it is just showing up and talking and presenting yourself and saying, this is what I want to do, you know. We're just trying to make the area nicer. And literally we painted so much, so many areas. And then we also got the BMC sent us like this letter, one brown paper thing. And I was like, okay, they're going to send it to jail or something, you know. We might be doing something illegal, you know, I don't know. Even though everything was under permission, but we anyways, you know, went in our formals Monday morning to the BMC office and said, hi, what's up? And he said, we have been following what you've been doing and we like what you're doing, so you can have all the walls in Bombay. And we were just shocked. Like, we were like, did not expect that. And literally, we just jumped on that moment and said, we want Tulsi Pipe Road, which is like...
That's what I remember it starting off.
8 kilometers from Mahim to Lower Parel. And we got them to clean the walls, give us the paint, install toilets. And it was a rage just to have citizens of Bombay of different kinds come out on their weekend and paint a small piece. Mm-hmm. Meant that Bombay is full of love and hope. And maybe sometimes our government and municipal authorities don't have the bandwidth because we are such a crazily populated city. So sometimes we need to take action in our own hands.
And sometimes it's just a simple thought, a simple, honest, heartfelt thought with a good intention where you just said, I want to change the way this looks. And things just fall into place, right? You had, like you said, the resources were already there.
Yeah.
You already had artists.
Yeah.
And then you said, come, let's just have fun. Let's just have a party. And then they just came. And even the authorities took note.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, come, we will also give you the wall. We will give you the paint. You just go ahead and do it. And it's just, it is about the first step, right? You kind of just start. And I really feel it is an honest first step. And it's really surprising how we can take you.
And
places.
That became then a tipping point in itself, because then everyone was like, oh, I can do this and I can do that. Maybe this is my skill. And it just like snowballed into so many different directions for people then re-looking at their own neighborhoods to do different things.
Right. And it was an expression, individual expression as well. You gave voice to so many people out there, right?
Yeah.
Such a beautiful thought.
Wow. And this is such an incredible story. And this is just not what you only do, right? You're such a multifaceted person and you are following so many passions. How do you manage time, right? Like and what is an urbanist? Tell me, I want to ask you two questions. So for what is an urbanist? And then also tell me about like, how do you manage time?
So an urbanist is someone who thrives in a city, who loves the chaos of the city, but also sees the beauty of the city and also feels that there's a lot of practical things you can do to improve life in a city for others.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's not just, it's everyone who navigates the city needs to be able to enjoy the city. Traffic jams are a big problem in Bombay, but there are ways where we can kind of make it nicer, where we talk to local communities, even talk to like auto guys. But it's a very big topic. It's the way the city is planned, and the way a city is planned or whether a locality is planned, it enables pockets for positive areas, safe areas for women, for children, you know, places to breathe, places to exercise, places to interact with your neighbors. We all live in these tall buildings. So when do we actually get to know people who live in our village, you know, because
so
every building is a village now, right?
So how do you become an urbanist?
Like,
is there like some website where you go and where do you...
Urban studies is a very big thing. You can, it's also a part of architecture.
Town planning.
Urban planning. And so there's the administrative side and then there's the community side and then there's the citizen side as an individual, as well as then the town planning authorities. And you have like a chief architect, like Charles Correa was like a famous, well-known planner of Navi Mumbai.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's still a lot of his, you know, prime concepts. So they essentially give you new ideas on now looking at the current setting of a particular area. How can we make it better? How can we make it better in the sense of how people can move around it, how people can access it, feel safe, and live a good life every day?
Wow, that's so beautiful. Now tell me, you are so passionate about so many things. You're an urbanist, you've been doing visual jockeying, you've been giving TED Talks. How do you manage your time and prioritize your different projects?
Wow, that's a big question. Every project of mine has a different life, a different incubation period, and I give it that space. It's not like every day I say I haven't achieved anything in this project. Every project has its own way of growing. And the more people that you bring into it, the more
complex
it becomes, right? So you have to give the space to everybody also to then participate in it in their way, because that's how you keep it neutral or energized and also new. the moment you are referencing and copying and saying nahi unka project aise kiya to humko bhi, I mean, you take learnings from other people, you learn from other people's mistakes, that helps. But end of the day, you have to look at every project as evolving on its own natural rhythm. And if I take a week as an example, every day for me is different. Sometimes I think it's more than a full-time 9-to-5 job because you never stop working. Things are always running in your head. And every day is different.
But if you have, say, 3 projects running simultaneously, right, and 3 different fields, how do you maneuver around that?
Lack of sleep.
No, but do you say, okay, Monday I'm going to do this project, Tuesday I'm going to do this project, Wednesday I'm going to do this? Or do you just say, I'm going to go with this until I hit a dead end, and then I'm going to go to the next project until I hit a dead end? Is it something like that?
I mean, the projects are not small. They are not things that you complete in a day.
Right.
They have the incubation time.
Yeah, that's what you...
So
right.
Maybe this week is more of this. Maybe next week is less of that. Maybe a different day for a different thing. You don't necessarily need to cram everything in the same day. Mm. If you understand...
How do you manage stress? Or is it stressful or is it not stressful?
Yeah, so that's one thing. I don't feel stress.
Because you're doing what you love?
Yeah, because...
Like how cliched it is,
because
you're
just
what you love.
You're doing what you know. You're doing things as you see, and you know that it requires that kind of energy. And where does stress come in? Stress is like when you're afraid of the unknown. I like taking risks, but I also know that I'm calculating behind those risks. And... as a filmmaker, if I copy a book, like this is a best-selling novel, okay? And if I copy it literally into a movie, it will fall flat.
Absolutely.
Because the whole idea of a filmmaker is you take the baseline story, visualize it, make it 3D, you know, see it, how it can, you know, transform into a 3D space. And that's when you make a good film. So right. Any remake of a book that you see and you wonder why the book is amazing and then the film is flopped, because it's a literal translation. So you have to have the skeleton or structure of your concept or company or whatever you want to make. But at the same time, then you have to put the magic in it.
Right.
You have to put all the layers. You have to put all the dynamics into it. And that's how you make a unique, beautiful project.
And that takes time.
And that takes time.
I love what you said about you get stressed when you go into the unknown. But you have gone into the unknown so many times, right? Every time you would have started, maybe that's that trip that you took from Mumbai to Sri Lanka, or you sailed around the world. What makes you push through and fight? You seem like a calm person.
sometimes too calm.
Right? How do you weather the storm? How do you go into a place where you have no clue if, in your case, whether you literally come out alive?
I think it starts off with my grandmom taking me to my first day at kindergarten. This is, again, a story I've been told.
If you come out alive out of kindergarten.
No, nothing like that, you know. So we're standing at the gate, first day of kindergarten. So obviously I've been briefed, you know, tomorrow you'll be going to school.
Yeah.
This is what you do at school, blah, blah, blah. Some story was given to me, of course. So I'm ready with a little bag and, you know, kindergarten. Right? You're too small to even comprehend what's going on. And we're standing at the gate and... there are other kids with their parents, you know, all come to drop for that first day. And I see there are kids crying and wailing and, you know, having like separation anxiety from their parents and things. So I literally look up to my grandmom and I'm like asking her, Amachi, should I be crying too? Because...
FOMO.
Yeah. So obviously I was already like... in a very functional headspace, you know, back, or I just looked at things differently and I would feel like, shit, am I supposed to be doing that? Because
I don't
know.
That.
Yeah. So I just looked at things differently. So, so therefore there was no fear, because maybe I also wanted to go to school because I was told that it was exciting and you're going to do all these things. So I was like, great, bring it on. I think it was also that. So,
much like sailing?
sailing, I kind of walked into myself because I could see the boats from our house, Shravana, where we grew up. And I would be like, this is such a strange thing. How are they doing this on the water? You know, so I literally followed, walked up to them and said, I want to try this. Just give me one chance. And that's where it just started, because
so curiosity.
It was curiosity. And then also I followed it up.
But you had an intrinsic belief that you could do it.
No, I had no belief. I was just like, what is this? Can I try it? And I wanted to see what it is for myself.
Right.
So unless you try something, you're not going to know. Like maybe about 5 years ago, I tried Formula 4 racing in Coimbatore. Okay.
Yeah.
I went to the racetrack. Like, what is this? Okay. Because I'm racing sailboats. I'm like, you know, maybe I love driving. So I was like, oh, maybe driving cars around a racetrack will be exciting. It was the most boring thing to do. You know, just going like 30 laps, you know, on like tar road.
Right, and you said this is not.
I was just like, no thanks. It's too boring. Yeah, because sailing had the dynamics of physics, biology, geography, maths, chemistry, like everything
so
you
when
studied
do you know,
in school.
When do you decide to stick to something?
When you like it enough.
Enough.
Yeah. So I would try other sports, even though I knew I loved sailing. I would try other sports. You know, you want to try skydiving, you want to try something else, and you try it, paragliding. I tried all of that, but I realized that sailing just like has all those things and more.
Right. Yeah. Right. So while you tried so many things, you must have failed at a few things, and entrepreneurs really face failure at so many areas. How do you manage failure?
You don't manage failure. You just take the learning from that and move on to the next. And the more you try, the better it is. Yeah.
And you traveled so many places. And while you were sailing, you must have, and also otherwise also in so many expeditions. What was different between when you were traveled? What did you take out of those travels and bring it back to India?
Wow.
And you've lived also in Russia for some time.
Yeah,
right?
I've lived in many countries for a long time. My last was New Zealand. So traveling opens you to how different people do the same things you do, but they do it differently. And in India, in whatever ways, we have followed life in a particular way. And we have our own constraints. We have our own, especially towards women. You know, the way women are brought up in India is very different from, say, women in New Zealand, women in England, women in the Caribbean. So those cultural contexts is what makes us unique. But at the same time, that's also what restricts us. And what you realize by the end of it is that there are many ways to live. There's not just one way that you've seen or you've heard of, but when you experience why certain other ways are also possible, you think, why not? You know, like my earlier story was how a guy in Breach Candy somewhere, he's from Kutch, his entire apartment, he did the whole gober wall.
Really?
Okay.
In a normal apartment, in a city building.
And because, and then they have no furniture, they sit on the floor and they eat, but they've done it in that style. So they are keeping elements of their history or elements of what they liked or how they grew up, but also in a modern apartment building, you know. So you can live life the way you want to. As long as you know what you don't like or what you don't want to do, the spectrum is
opens up so many things. So
yeah.
True.
And then you stand with your beliefs, right? At the end of it, that's also extremely important. Like,
I think beliefs is a strange word. We can be conditioned to believe in a lot of things. I think it's important for you to question, be curious about everything you do. Like, if I didn't question things, I would not seek to try those things.
Yeah.
Okay, there is no inherent law that you have to do this or you have to behave this way. We have been conditioned living in this planet to behave in a particular way.
So as part of this conditioning that you were talking about, we as women, I think a lot of us are conditioned through childhood. But what advice do you give young women who want to venture out into so-called male-dominated industries, right? You've been there so many times. How have you maneuvered your way through it? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, if we keep looking at the conflict as male-dominated versus, I mean, it's just gender conversations, right? Mm. What if you look at everyone as a neutral gender, and then you're doing the best of what you can, and understanding that in India, especially with the class system, there is a lot of bias already.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding that, but using it as a power. So can we try to look at things from the female gaze? Right now, even women are conditioned to look at things from the male gaze. So we are all unconsciously doing that.
So true. In fact, for us at Zach, one of the reasons we do what we do is we believe that business is run in such a masculine way, which is so hustle, hustle, go, go, go. How is that we can get some softer feminine energy inside it and make it a little more nurturing, a little more accepting? I love the men folk out there.
Oh, yeah.
But, how is it that there can be an alternative way of doing business? Mm-hmm. And all the work that we're doing within our communities, just to be able to, like you said, about the man who built his house like his roots in Kutch. Is there any other way of doing business which is not the stereotypical way that we all know it? We're exploring, we're learning, but the things that we've learned over the past few years, right? And as a woman, when you're choosing to be in the boardroom, right, with other people, do you need to be doing it the same way as your male counterparts? You can be holding your, you don't need to be a man, you don't need to be a, you don't need to be, what is it called, a man in a woman's body. You can be a woman and still say what it is that you have to say and really give a different point of view. And sometimes it can just be so different, and it could be accepted by a lot of people, but we just should be ready to be curious and be fearless to ask and to just have our voice out there, right?
Yeah. So to have our own voices, we need to, one, have conversations with ourselves, not just
so
around.
True. Yes.
So when you are having those questions, curiosities, yes, I like this, no, I don't like this. When you think to yourself and you reason with yourself, that voice is then the voice that needs to come out. Then once that voice comes out, you make your presence felt, heard, and then you're able to then have a valid reason for the changes you are asking.
Right.
And not to operate in a male gaze end of the day.
So true. And in fact, you have been a part of a lot of strong women groups, right? Be it the Maiden or be it, you've just been in part of so many. Women Pressure, right? That was the name
female
of
it.
Female Pressure. How are women who are part of these strong groups, is there any personality trait that they exude which is different from other women? Tell us a little bit about what you think strong, successful women have, which is common.
Okay, so Maiden is a women's team. So we were looking performance in sports, in adventure. Female Pressure is a women's collective internationally of women performers or female identifying performers. So you could be a musician, you could be a visual artist, you could be any kind of performer. And both these kind of groups are so interesting because they show the female way to do it, you know? So whether our then future heroes are, especially in India, I feel we need to go beyond Indira Gandhi and Mother Teresa. Mm. Those are not the only archetypes we have. Mm. We have so many more women doing so
at different
many
levels.
Different things, yeah. You know? Unfortunately, Bollywood, Hollywood kind of, you know, take presence because they are visible. Mm. They are visible and they are vocal. So now it's important for women in all kinds of disciplines to then come out and be vocal about what they're doing.
Right, and social media kind of allows you to do that. So while there are so many drawbacks, I think a big positive is that it allows you to have a space where you can talk. And people who want to listen to you can choose to listen to you. But it's important to be able to speak up.
Yeah. And even when you're in a women's group, sometimes you may not be heard. So that is something I've experienced. But again, it's up to you to then stand up and make yourself be heard. Now, how to do it? There are so many ways to do it. And
tell us a few that you use.
Break the ice. Have fun. I think if you are having fun and if you keep it real, I think you break the ice anyways, whether it's with kids, whether it's with, you know, animals, whether it's with colleagues or friends. There has to be an effort. And there's no secret to effort, you know.
You have to just take it.
Yeah, you have to step.
Play and fun is an integral part of collaborating. Does that making collaboration easier? So is there anything else? Because you've worked on so many diverse projects and worked with so many diverse kind of people. So how do you collaborate with so many people together?
So I've not been scared of going on my own to do things. So whether it was to go for a movie when I was like 15, you know, you just went to the theater and saw a movie yourself. That was unheard of because everyone went in a group.
So,
just small things, just go. Even now when I talk to people, they have so many questions about what it is, but they are not willing to inquire themselves. You know, they don't want to do the homework. So sometimes you just have to show up. If you don't like it, if you don't agree to it, you can leave. But that's the only way you're going to find out, because sometimes media can lie. It may not be true. So go check it out for yourself. See if you like it. See if you agree.
You have to get your feet wet and your hands dirty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. And if you already have 5 things that you like and your life is full, maybe you don't have the time and space, but at some point you might want to see what else is there to offer.
You know, because you've asked this question, I felt there was a very specific shift in my life. And I feel it, especially with women, it happens with every decade. There's a change in your perspective. Has there been a shift in this decade of yours from the Dhanya from before? And do you look at life differently? Do you have different ambitions for yourself? Or is it the same? Are there new things that you want to do?
For one, I'm much more grounded now. And also, I listen to my body a lot more. I think that's important. So I give my body as much rest as is asked, and if not more. And I really indulge in that, because a healthy body is a healthy mind, and a healthy mind is then has the space for new things and also to listen to other people. When you listen to other people, you get a sense of new things that are going on, or just how energies move and work. And you can, like 2005, I had a very clear sense of there was a cultural shift happening in Bombay and in India. And since then, like, I saw the wall project happening and just a lot of the way things were happening, I could see that happen. So a lot of the times you have to sit back and observe and take a recap of what's happening around you. Is this really valid, or are we getting blindsided by something else? And just come back to, you know, is this what you want to do? Is this where you want to be at? So always checking with yourself. And if anything feels uncomfortable, question why it feels uncomfortable. Why it feels uncomfortable? Because there's truth in that.
So you've gone so much inward, and the tapestry of this beautiful life you've led so far. Are there any regrets you have that, like, looking back or looking forward, is there something that you would like to change?
Wow, I've not even had the moment to think about that. So.
That's a good life.
Yeah, I mean, it's very recently that I actually figured that I could just time out on a Sunday and not do anything. I've just been putting myself into too many things. So I wouldn't change it, but now I know that if not a Sunday, at least Tuesdays I can take my day off and not do anything.
And that's such an important lesson, because normally everybody thinks you have to do it on the weekend. No, you can do it any day which you choose to have that break. And taking a break is more important, and taking that rest is so crucial.
Yeah, I think one thing I would like to share about how I operate with Bombay is that I just don't want to, I mean, while Bombay is very chaotic and hectic. There's also a lot of empty or peaceful or calm spaces it has. So I navigate the city in a way where I'm not adding to the traffic, or I'm going in the opposite direction of the traffic if I have to navigate, or I'm doing things just alternatively so that I find my peace and quiet to then recharge different spaces or do my work within that. So while, and also this happens because I have heard how, say, people in Norway work. So when they have winter time or summer time, they change their office timings. Mm. So what would be a 9 to 5, during summer, they will shift it to 7 to 3 o'clock. So then people have more time in the evening to be out in the sun, do more sporting activities, because it's largely a cold, depressing country rest of the year. So when you hear things like that, as you travel, when you talk to more people, you know, it's not just about taking great photographs and going to beautiful sites. That's one part of it.
Yes.
But it's about learning how different cultures work and how they adapt to the different things. And now we need to adapt to the way cities are, or just improve the way we live in a city. You know, we don't have to kill ourselves. We do not have to spend so much time in traffic. Maybe we need to just re-question how we live.
Absolutely.
And do things. The answers are there.
You know, I love that you said this, because really it's about creating an alternative way of living. And entrepreneurship allows you that.
Yeah.
Because you can decide the course of your life. You can decide the course of the people around you. You can build a culture in your organization that can be similar to the things that you hold important in dear. So for us, between Ankita and I, family time is very important. You know, our food and our health is very important. Our travel is very important, while work is very important, right? Entrepreneurship allows us to do that. We really kind of promote this in our community, to be able to choose well, work from home if you can. Yeah. Don't add to the chaos, right?
That's thank you, COVID.
Yeah, absolutely. But though the rest of the world is going back, you know, into the normal ways of living, Ankita stays in Delhi and I stay here. So we don't have a, you know, the distance doesn't separate, keep us separate in that way. We meet every day for work, and we've somehow managed to create a bubble that works for us. And now we're inviting more and more people into our bubble, because we are saying that, you know, it works. We've tried it for so many years and it works. And just like even for you, you've gone out there and done things so differently. And I think the word that comes out for you is just alternative, you know, curious, alternative, being open to explore, being open to try new things, going all in with heart, taking people together, learning and adapting. These are all values that we hold true and close to our hearts, and that's why we felt it was so important to call you as the first female guest, which is the most important thing on our calendar this year. But thank you so much for being here. We loved this time together.
Absolutely, and it was such a learning experience. And before we close the show, I want to ask you, any message that you want to give the budding and emerging entrepreneurs?
Wow, so many messages. I think the most important one would be to just go out and do it. And India needs millions more entrepreneurs. We already have a lot, but now we need to scale up. Most of our country is still in a very bad state. They can't even expect to have a daily life, you know. So I think we need to create more avenues for more people to then participate in a better life.
Doing what they love.
Doing what they love, doing what they can, motivating, giving space, women, men, children, animals. I think all of us...
Coexisting well,
but... we need to be more entrepreneurial to create those spaces for other people. I mean, India still needs a lot of work, and we need to push
towards
it. And
we have a lot of hands.
And we have a lot of hands. Yes. Now it's everyone. How do we get everyone to hold hands together, right?
Amazing.
Amazing. to join this mission, I feel India was the golden bird in the 10th century, and this is about bringing it back again. So entrepreneurship will bring back India to being that golden bird.
Right.
So let's all root for all those entrepreneurs and join Zach on this mission. Like, subscribe, and follow for more.